So as a general rule, superhero movies, as you might suspect, do tend to do pretty well. And this one was certainly no exception. In fact, Black Panther was the superhero movie that got to $1 billion faster than any superhero movie in history. And it quickly became the top-grossing film of 2018 and is now the ninth highest-grossing film of all time and still counting. And so far, it's brought in $1.35 billion. And it also has the unique distinction of being the very first superhero movie ever nominated for the Best Picture Academy Award. And it also received six other Oscar nominations, including one for its enormous score. Music by Ludwig Göransson. Of course, for people of my vintage, you know, you say Black Panther, you know, you think Bobby Seale, Huey P. Newton, and Eldridge Cleaver. But of course, this is not exactly about Huey P. Newton, so forth. What did you think when you first saw the film?
Ryan Coogler, the director, is a dear friend of mine. We've been working together for 12 years. And so one of the good things about being close friends with the director is that you have a good relationship. So I always get involved very early in the process of the filmmaking. So I got involved already when he wrote the script. He sent the script to me. I read it. I decided to go to Africa and do all my research and study and learn the music. And a couple of months later, I actually saw the movie for the first time. And there was no music in it. I think the cut was about 4 hours long, and I remember right afterwards I was crying, and I was calling my wife, girlfriend at the time, we're not married, and I told her, like, I think this is the Star Wars of our generation.
Wow. And you know, when John Williams was working on Star Wars, the first one, nobody thought it was going to be anything but a kids movie on Saturday afternoons. This is now what, up to $1.3 billion, so mm-hmm. It's done pretty well.
I had no idea it was going to make this kind of impact through the whole world in every part.
Yeah, it's nice when that happens.
Absolutely. I'm very honored to be nominated. It still feels like I'm dreaming. It's a childhood dream of mine, so it all feels very, very surreal.
Yes, I'm sure it does. It's an enormous score.
Mm-hmm.
But you did have a lot of time to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from doing the research in Africa, mm-hmm. which is, you know, not what all composers do,
mm-hmm.
how did you find your way in?
I read the script, and I told Ryan right after I read the script, like, the only way I could score this movie is to go to Africa and to study and learn African music and the language of African music, because it's so completely different from Western classical music in terms of, we think of music as in harmony and melody and counter melodies. In Africa, the musical language is based off rhythms and counter rhythms and extreme complexities in rhythm. I was also linked up with an artist. His name is Baba Mal. I got his phone number from a mutual friend, and I called him a week before me and my wife were going to go to Senegal, and I called him, and I was like, hey, my name is Ludwig Göransson. I'm working on a movie called Black Panther, and I wonder if you have any time to maybe meet up and do some recording. And he told me, hey, yeah, of course, like, just come down here and you can go on tour with me, like, follow me on tour. And we went down to Dakar. We got picked up at the airport by his assistant, and we had no idea what to expect and how the journey was going to be. And it ended up being a 12, 14-hour car ride through Senegal on these really tiny roads with potholes everywhere, and we come to this tiny little house. Baba Mal sits in the corner, surrounded by these beautiful women serenading him, singing songs and praising him, giving him food. And he says, well, it's time to go to a concert. So we get in the car again. We drive down to the center of the village where we see 2,000-3,000 people, kids. It's 3 in the morning. It's like kids, like everyone is there. People have been waiting for months for and traveling from other surrounding villages by foot or by donkey carts to go to this concert. It's a big event. People are dressed to their teeth in their best outfits. And the energy is just insane. Like, people are just waiting for this concert to start. And Bob Marley steps out on the stage and he just starts singing. And you could feel like everyone was just transfixed by his presence just coming out in the middle of the night and just kind of singing this beautiful song, welcoming people to this concert. And 3 minutes later, the band just kicks in, and I'm like, no one can sit still. Everyone's just dancing, and people are walking up to him, giving him money as he's singing, giving him money, putting money in his clothes, like, which is part of the ritual, is a part of the performance. Singing about female mutilation, he's singing about world problems, he's singing about arranged children's marriage to the people in the village, and everyone's listening to what he's saying. And at that time, I was like, okay, I'm definitely at the right place at the right time.
Exactly. Exactly. As we were listening to that, you said the tough thing was trying to figure out how to get the orchestra together with the traditional African music, which, you know, is a real feat. I mean, because it is two completely different music languages.
Exactly. And it took a lot of time to figure out how to do it in a way where I could still keep the soul of the music in traditional African music. I mean, I had to kind of completely rethink the way I write for the orchestra. Instead of thinking of harmony and melody in the way I orchestrate, I used the different instrument sections in an orchestra more as counter rhythms. I had strings playing with one of the counter rhythms in the djembes. I had a brass playing with the counter rhythm of the dunduns. And from learning about the complexity of the rhythms, I was able to implement the orchestra into the African music in a way where this still feels African to me, even though it's like a 100-piece orchestra playing with the drums.
Yeah. And of course, you have to do all that within the context of a Marvel action picture as well. You know, it's just a very tricky thing to balance, I would think.
Yeah, because it's a superhero film. It needs to feel enormous at some times. You know, you have this incredible big action pieces. You have these sweeping shots of Africa. You have very emotional pieces where he's talking to his dead father.
Yeah, and also it seems among the superhero movies that I've seen, one of the most serious underneath the action surface. I mean, it says some really profound things along the way.
Absolutely, and that's also why people want to see this movie 10 times, because every time you learn something new about the characters, you learn something new about the story. There's so much to learn.
Yeah. And I blush to confess, for a while, I didn't recognize the new king. I'm a big baseball fan, and he was the star of 42, that Jackie Robinson picture.
Yeah.
And it took me about 20 minutes to say, oh, wait a minute. You know, that's how much he vanishes into the part. It's a good sign.
It is a really good sign. I mean, Chadwick Boseman did an incredible job. And it was also very inspiring to see, to draw from the acting and for an incredible costume design Ruth Carter did. And everything about working on this movie was just so inspiring, from the actor's performance to everyone behind the camera who did such an incredible job.
Yeah. And the guy doing the music also did a pretty incredible job. Rhythmically, I think African music, I mean, it's the most complex, and maybe the only close thing when it comes to popular music is Brazilian music, which of course has its roots in
exactly.
African music as well.
Yeah.
The main voice of this film, I don't remember another film except, you know, maybe it was used in some local color scenes in various African movies, but the talking drum is essential to the score and to the movie itself.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting instrument. You know, you never really hear it in Western music. You don't hear it on the radio, and I don't think I ever heard it in a film before. And I was just so drawn to it when I went to Senegal and I heard this incredible musician, Massamba Diop, play the talking drum, which is also called the tama. And to be a musician in Africa, you're a griot, you're born into it. It's a bloodline running through your family. So he was born to play the talking drum. His parents played the talking drum. His dad played the talking drum. His grandfather. And so he told me about the tradition of the talking drum. And he said, talking drum is the only drum that breathes, just like a human voice. You basically put it under your shoulder and you squeeze it with your arm and it breathes just like a lung. When you squeeze it on your arm, you can create different pitches. And with its different pitches, you can control it like a voice. So hitting the drum, when you squeeze it, you can say words. So you send messages to each other. And that was something they used to do in the villages. The talking drum player had a meeting with the king, and the king told the talking drum player, well, let everybody know that this person had died. And the talking drum player went into the middle of the village and played a message to everyone. Everyone heard it and understood immediately what happened. I asked Massamba, how do you say T'Challa on the talking drum? T'Challa, who is Black Panther, and Massamba played the rhythm on his talking drum. Do-do-do, T'Challa, do-do-do. And I was like, that's really cool. Like, what if we have five other talking drum players record that with you? And he put together a group of six talking drum players, and we got together one night, and we recorded that rhythm. And that became one of T'Challa's motifs. So every time T'Challa or Black Panther comes into the movie, you see him in the movie, he's always supported with the rhythm of the talking drums. When the talking drum players finally saw this movie, there's not that many movie theaters in Senegal, and there was one that was playing it in Dakar, and my friend told me that there's the line to it was people waiting for hours to be able to see it because it's a kind of small theater. And so they called me afterwards, and they were so happy and proud, and they told me, hey, Ludwig, we're so proud of hearing our music being represented on the screen like this. We never heard a talking drum being played on a big movie, and now the whole world can hear our music.
Yeah, and it was kind of a dying art form, and now it's a real cool thing for young kids.
Yeah, Massamba told me that. He was like, hey man, all the kids want to play talking drum now. They want to learn how to play the cello's theme.
I think like all great scores, you know, this one really carves out an area unique to itself. Mm-hmm. It does what all great film scores have to do. It serves the picture. But when it can serve the picture in a totally original way, that explains a lot of things, like number one, how well it works, and number two, why it got an Oscar nomination. Mm. Yeah. Well, again, congratulations, Ludwig Göransson, one of the five composers nominated this year for an Academy Award.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, our pleasure.